The Conversation on BBC Radio Kent with Dominic King.
Author Miriam McGurk, business communications coach Chris Pollard, husband and wife from Maidstone, are with us in the studio tonight. Good to see you both. Hello.
Hello, Dom. How are you?
I'm very well.
Good. I just thought I'd ask.
And extremely delighted to be here, Dom, obviously.
In rehearsal, that was perfect, by the way. What happened?
I don't know. I don't listen. I'm a man.
Well, it's interesting you say that. Lots of conversations tonight on the show about advertising and the kind of stereotypes. Maybe we'll get to that on the way. Miriam is a published author, storyteller, speaker and blogger. Chris, communications coach. He's also a trustee of the Romney Resource Centre in New Romney. Hearing an author on the programme tonight, Molly Green, talking about book deals. It's an interesting one, isn't it, Miriam? Because the world of books now has so opened up. You've got your traditional publishers, but you've also got this whole world of the internet where people are enjoying their links with authors and having that direct approach. No longer do you have to rely on the PR machine from the publishing companies.
That's right. And in actual fact, a lot of the authors now, writers, have to do their own PR and marketing. That's part of the package. I was only looking the other day. What can you do? What can you sell to us that is going to interest you, us, in taking you on board? What's your marketing package? And a lot of publishers, they want, for example, on Twitter, 10,000 followers before they will even consider accepting you on contract.
So is it a difficult world to be in, being an author, because you effectively have these ideas that you constantly want to share with people, but you then got this business negotiation to do. You've got to be a diplomat, you've got to be a business person, you've got to be everything.
That's right. The world of writing and being a published author has changed irrevocably the last 10 years. It is, I say to people, I am not a business, but I am in the business of writing, and therefore it has to be run as a business. Every single aspect, from social media to your day-to-day marketing, to how you run it, how you come across to your followers, how do you engage your followers, how do you target market them, how do you continue to keep them interested, you know, live streaming, video, it's all a huge part of it now.
And that's the world that you work within, which is quite useful to have you on board, I guess, Chris Pollard, because the whole world of communication is what you do. But in your world as well, which is business, you are using that to communicate with others, to the business community, about how to bring themselves across. I mean, actually, your two worlds collide, don't they?
Yes, they do. My focus in marketing is around engagement to develop the relationship. Relationships then to develop collaborations. Business has changed, as Miriam was saying, in the publishing world, business has changed irrevocably in the last 5 years, 10 years maybe, because back in the 90s, it's 17 years now, I keep forgetting it's 2017, but I mean, yes, let's say 20 years, let's double it again. 20 years ago, it was all about competition. Nowadays, it is about collaboration. One source, one spark, focusing on the same end goal.
I can tell you're in business. You keep moving the bottom line. It's interesting, isn't it, in terms of how we also get our knowledge about, certainly authors. Blogs have become a huge thing, Miriam, not just in this country, but I know in the United States as well, where authors now pretty much only communicate through their blogs to their readership. And then it seems in a way that the book is the byproduct of that other part of the relationship.
That's right. And yet without the book, nothing happens. Without the actual writer writing that book. And therefore, a lot of writers struggle to remove themselves from their writing cave in order to do that. Mm. But the blog is very important. And what I have been doing for the last probably 3-4 months, I'm also not just writing the blogs, I'm also actually recording them. So they're going out on audio. And the other thing as well is it's become really important for authors to get involved in and keep their followers and readers interested is a newsletter type thing. On, for example, mine goes out on MailChimp, has just started only about a month ago. And I think it's suddenly scaled up in terms of my followers. It's been quite incredible.
But I was talking to the children's author this week on the show, Jacqueline Wilson, and she was making a point about how she doesn't know how the modern day author trying to get publishers to be interested in their work survive, because it is so tough. It is a, you know, it's a, she actually thinks that the kind of self-publishing or the use of the internet is a great idea for authors now, because it is almost impossible to get your Bloomsbury or other companies like HarperCollins and Simon Schuster to give huge deals to individuals.
That's right. And what's actually coming into play now also is hybrid publishing. Very much so. And even the hybrid publishers, unless they are absolutely passionate about what they're reading, you have to go through a whole stream of screening before you'll be accepted, even though it's a whole different format. The sad thing, I mean, self-publishing has its place, absolutely. But what I have found occasionally is that there are a lot of people out there who are using it purely as a bolt-on. And I just think in this fast world, we still expect a really high quality and standard of reading, and we want to raise the bar. And I came on this journey, and my passion every single time is to develop the craft of my writing. And I would be so sad to see that lost because of self-publishing.
Author Miriam McGurk and business communication coach Chris Pollard with me on BBC Radio Kent. Now, tell me about this thing called Uplit. What is Uplit? Is it a new genre?
Well, it is. A few months back, I was actually speaking at an event, and in the front row was an older lady, published the traditional way, and she was very concerned about what kind of genre of fiction I was writing in. And I said, well, my American colleagues, publishers and editors, have said to me it's contemporary fiction. That's not good enough, she said. And thank goodness, a few months ago, I was had researched, and I see that publishers who love labels, I'm not a great label person, but on the other hand, I have to target my market. And I was so thrilled that sweeping seemingly the nation this year and again next year, it's Uplit. Uplit is the new genre. And I'm so grateful because I can claim that, yes, I'm an uplit. That's my genre.
So what does it mean?
It's
kind of lifting.
Yes.
Uplifting stuff?
You know, what do people want when there's a lot going on, there's a lot of upheaval and change? They want joyful joyful. They want optimistic storytelling. They want happy endings. They want to leave the reader feeling cheered up, elated, perhaps inspired, uplifted. And I think, thank you, because at the moment, as you know, Dom, I'm completing my first novel, Days in Our Street. And it's also about novels about older people.
But this is a departure for you in your first novel because of the other books you've written, which were the kind of storytelling about life.
And, yes.
And so always interesting, isn't it, to work in a fiction world and think of those and nonfiction and how they sort of mix. And Chris, interesting about talking about labels in the business world, that's one area that you constantly will hear people talking about strategies and strategizing and how that comes about, but at its very heart, it's communication, isn't it?
It is about communication, and I get lost when people start talking about strategies, to be honest with you, because there's so much noise. Strategy, of course, is important, but it's about getting back to the nitty gritty. It's about thinking, who's the most important here? Customers, customer service. And in my opinion, customer service seems to be coming way down the line nowadays. And I think many businesses out there need to seriously think about how they're engaging. There's too much push, and businesses need to start learning how to attract. And how do they attract? You've got to engage with your potential customers and your existing customers. You've got to give them service.
You're spending a lot of time, I know, doing lots of talks out and about around Kent and the southeast. And you did an event recently where you were talking about sort of just the time we're in, I guess, Christmas and where we are and what people are thinking right now. And it's been an interesting year for a lot of people.
It has been an interesting year. I think you're probably talking about the one I was at last week where I was co-presenting. It was called The Business Diaries. And there were five storytellers. And the subject of the evening was the gift. And at the beginning of the second half, I came back and I said, well, I don't have one gift. I've got three gifts. The first gift turned into a gift, and I didn't realise she was a gift when I went out with her. And that's my wife, Miriam, who said to her sister after we'd had our first lunch, he's a nice chap, but he's very messed up. I might meet him occasionally. Second gift is my daughter, Alison, who's getting married next year to her 6'3" prince. And the third gift is the gift of health. And if there's something that I would share with everybody this year, 40 years ago, a gentleman who's probably my age now, he looked at me one day and he said, Chris, you're young, you've got your health. But remember this throughout life, however much money you have, however many cars, houses, the most important thing is your health. Your health is your wealth.
The comedian Peter Kay cancelled all his upcoming work projects because of what we know now as unforeseen family circumstances. He said on Twitter that his family had to come first. And we've been asking throughout the programme, when did you make a sacrifice for your family? Maybe it was work or health or a relationship that ended or started. Do you regret the decisions you made? Was it the best decision you ever made? Poignant moment, actually, Chris, for you was your dad.
That's correct. October 2010, the 21st of October, I spoke to Dad. We were living in Turkey, and I was chatting away to him, and he kept coughing. My mother came on the line, and she said, your father's had a scan. I said, OK, I'm coming back. I got on a plane 3 days later. I arrived back in the UK on the 23rd of October, and on the 26th of October, I heard it was terminal. He died 7 years yesterday. I made the decision then I had to stay in the country because my mother was not well. I ended up living with my mother. And while I was living with my mother early in 2011, I thought, well, I've got to start doing something. So I got into voluntary work. And it's through that initial voluntary work that we are sitting today in this studio, because everything has led from there. I have absolutely no regrets. It's one of these sad times in life where actually there's so much good has come out of adversity, and bless him, I miss him every day. But yes, it was the best thing, and I'm so glad I did it.
Miriam, the idea of sometimes, you know, we do make sacrifices, but also, I think for family, and everyone has different families and different makeups of where family work out, but we do sometimes, don't we, have to make that sacrifice. We do need to think about what's more important in life.
I agree, Dom. And actually, over the first 6 months after Chris's dad died, I actually became Joan's carer, his mum's carer. And not all day, every day, but not 24/7. And I have my own health challenges. But I thought, you know what? I know how I can manage it. This lady needs my help. This lady needs care. And so, yes, you go that extra mile. You give, because what they gave to me over the years, you can't put a price on.
Priceless.
Yes.
It's BBC Radio Kent at Drive. Now, throughout this conversation tonight, something's been staring at me. It's a gift here. And I mentioned a little earlier on about how I'm rubbish at wrapping up gifts. And then I see this gorgeously wrapped gift here. Can you talk us through it while I open it? Because I'll do this and you can tell us what we're doing.
Okay, Dom. I have heard you over the last weeks talk about Elf on the Shelf.
Yeah, this is my nephew and my niece in Canterbury who have the Elf on the Shelf, and it's unbelievable.
And ever since then, every other friend who has a little one, it's Elf on the Shelf. But Dom, did you know that in Ireland, we have our own version of Elf on the Shelf? It's called Gnome in the Home.
Yeah, but
and the wonderful thing about Gnome in the Home is... The wonderful thing about Gnome in the Home, Dom, is that at the back is a little hole, and you can put money in there
at
the very top behind its head, and you can keep putting coins in there, Dom, until it's full.
This is beautiful. It is just gorgeous. I will make sure there is a picture of us with the gnome in the home coming up on the way. But before we get to the news, Miriam tonight, as it is Christmas as well, has a short story for us. One you've written?
I actually rewrote this extract especially for the programme this evening,
Dom. Oh, thank you very much. Now, it's a story about Gino finding love and a home. Let's have a listen to this from Miriam McGurk tonight.
A Christmas miracle. My name is Gino. When I was one, my owners abandoned me to the forests and the treacherous mountains, living outside with no food, love or shelter, through rainstorms, thunder and lightning, weather conditions no puppy should have to survive through. My situation was dire. I was a scrawny bit of a thing, my coat yellow, with no shine, smelling of decay and dirt. I did my best, but there was no mother to guide me, no owner to train me. One morning, as I scavenged for food, I came upon a black, white and tan elder dog. Her owners followed down the track. With sympathy, they viewed this tatty, ratty little pup. My heart yearned to rush forward and beg for cuddles. Instead, I held back and waited. The kind lady said, "This poor mite needs care and food." I showed her how high I could point my ears, how I could wag my tail and smile the biggest smile. "Sadly, we cannot take on another dog," she turned to the man beside her. My heart slumped, my tail dropped, my ears flopped, and my smile vanished. I stared longingly at the lady. I followed them back to the house. I waited all day on the terrace. I tried to communicate with our dog called Selena. "As long as you remember this is my patch, I will respect you," the elder dog barked. Renewed hope and energy surged through my body. Sheepishly, I nodded. That evening, the man and woman softened to my plight. From homeless puppy, suddenly, I was given a home, food and love. And my Christmas, it was my Christmas miracle. And they christened me Gino. My message this Christmas season, for all of you dear listeners, please take care of the ones you love and cherish. And never forget to reach out to those who need your help and support.
Storyteller Miriam McGurk, business communication coach Chris Pollard, The Conversation.